What Remains of Meng Yao? Written by Rinleaf. Read by Opalsong. Fandom, Mo Dao Zu Shi, or The Untamed. Rating, Mature. Relationship, Lan Zichun, Meng Yao, Nie Mingjue. Warning for graphic depictions of violence. Also tagged for Alternate Universe, Canon Divergence, Shapeshifter AU, Sunshot Campaign, Hopeful Ending, Angst, Hurt Comfort, Minor Character Death, Canon Typical Violence, and Blood.
Side, I'm trapped in silence, just a possession. Is the sex or only violence that feeds your obsession? You send me to a broken state where I can't take the pain, just long enough that
if you want a saint, you don't want me. December's Traditions. Mother. Meng Yao's first memory is of Mama weeping. Meng Shi is beautiful and soft and kind, and Meng Yao loves her the most in the entire world. His stomach squeezes tightly when she sits by the window in robes of white and light pink, looks out to the water of Yunmeng and cries. Meng Yao is 4 years old. He understands very little about what the world is like outside these rooms. He knows the jiejies at the house love him, and that Qing Furen likes giving him candy, that he must not leave his mother's bed when the sun goes down and the voices of laughing men seep up through the floorboards to the little attic room. The most important thing Meng Yao knows is this. Mama is the best, the kindest, and the most beautiful in the whole entire world. She must not cry. Ever. Mama, Meng Yao says, winding his arms around his mother. Don't cry. Aya will make it better. He kisses whatever part of Mama he can reach. Her elbow, mostly. Her side, her belly. Meng Shi says nothing, but she places a cool hand on her son's head. That touch says everything Meng Yao needs to know. You are safe. You are loved. You are good. She will teach him later about the sea, about his father, about his father's promise. She will teach him to protect his skin, the other one, not the one he wears around people who aren't like him and his mother. Meng Yao will watch his mother cry by the window many times. He will rise from between the books she buys him and will put his arms around her, will let her breathe into his hair and put her hand on his cheek. A promise. You will go to Koi Tower, Meng Shi says. You will go to Koi Tower and your father will give you a name, and you will be a great cultivator, respected by all. That is my wish for you. I will, Anyang, says Meng Yao, with a bright, dimpled smile. I will, and then I will buy your bond from Qing Furen, and buy you a house by the sea, and ask my father for your other skin so you can swim again. You're a good boy, Meng Shi says. My beautiful, good boy. Meng Shi takes him to the sea for the first time that year. Meng Yao is 14, gangly limbs and awkward fingers and anxious thoughts. But when he wades far enough into the water and changes skin, it turns out to be a profoundly simple thing. He swims and chases fish and tumbles between long fronds of seaweed. He breathes. He plays. He is free. When he returns, his mother waits for him on the shore. Her cheeks glisten with sparkling droplets of sea spray. Anyang, Meng Yao calls and runs to her, winds his arms around her middle. Anyang, I'm very proud of you, Ayao, Meng Shi whispers and clutches her son close. This is what life is, until Meng Yao comes of age. It is holding his mother and breathing in the scent of jasmine and lilacs. It is listening to the woes and small joys of the women of the house. It is folding silks and stitching hems, washing dishes and memorizing cultivation manuals. It is avoiding the men in the main room downstairs and the other children who throw stones at him outside. It is Yuan Jia sneaking him a square of sticky, sugary pastry. It is Xian Jia teaching him how to apply lip color. On the day he turns of age, his mother, his pale and ever-sickening mother, puts a cloak around Meng Yao's shoulders, made of the softest fabric he has ever touched. It is the color of yellow peonies, and it is embroidered by his mother's careful hands around the hem. Meng Shi ties it shut with a ribbon, takes his hand, and places a silver bracelet into it. Your father gave this to me the night he left. He will recognize you when you give it to him. The women of the house hug him goodbye one by one. Live this dream for us, Xian Jia whispers into his ear when it's her turn. Even if it's impossible, I wish you luck. Meng Yao will wonder sometimes if all of them knew what was going to happen. If all of them, one by one, expected him to fail. He will wonder if they laughed at him and his beautiful, sick, lonely mother after he left. These are poisonous thoughts. They are unbecoming of him. But Meng Yao can't help it. In Meng Shi's stories, Jing Guangshan cuts a heroic figure, an exceptional cultivator, leader of a powerful sect, eyes dark like night and voice smooth like velvet. He fell in love with Meng Shi on a Lanling seashore and promised her the world. If the Meng Yao of the future could tell the Meng Yao of now one thing, it would be this. Don't believe your mother. Don't believe your mother. Don't believe your mother. The Meng Yao of now wouldn't listen, of course. He will go to Lanling. He will suffer. He will spit at the hands that try to help and embrace the ones that hurt. That is his lot to bear. Your father is a good man, Ayao, his mother tells him. You will see when you meet him. The Meng Yao of now smiles and waves at the women standing in the door to the house he grew up in. The red lantern swings in the wind, unlit. Meng Yao travels to Lanling. Meng Yao travels to Lanling to find out about monstrous men, not the kind he knows, the kind the women of the house warn him about. Jing Guangshan is that kind of monster too, Meng Yao eventually learns. But what awaits him in Koi Tower is cruelty of a different sort. Jing Guangshan is standing on the top of the stairs to Koi Tower. Sun beats down from above, and Meng Yao is sweating under his mother's cloak. I am your son, he says. My mother is Meng Shi, and I am Meng Yao, and I am your son. Jing Guangshan looks him over from his head to his toes. Meng Yao smiles and hides his shaking hands in his sleeves. Meng Shi, says Jing Guangshan slowly. Then his eyes flash in recognition. So the monster woman gave birth to a monster spawn? What a sight! Jing Guangshan laughs, and it is a grating, sharp thing. Meng Yao's smile freezes. He searches for the right words to say, but finds none. Jin Songju, I... Get this thing out of my sight! Jing Guangshan inclines his head, then turns to leave without another glance. Cultivators in robes of shining gold grab Meng Yao by the arms. He cries out, tries to find purchase to plant his feet, to stop them from touching him, from lifting him, from feeling them breathe into his face. Down, dog! One of the men hisses. Meng Yao finds himself momentarily suspended midair, and then he hits the stairs. Each step is a jarring blow, a broken tooth. The fall lasts for minutes. What is left of Meng Yao by the end of it? A broken wrist, a bloodied mouth, a beautiful pale cloak, torn. A money pouch, empty. A ride back to Yunmeng on the back of a fishing boat. Meng Yao's heart, heavy with shame. What is left of Meng Shi? Meng Yao opens the door to the house of his mother, to the resounding echo of silence. Xian Jia exits the kitchen when she hears the lock click and almost drops the spoon she holds. Ai Yao, she says. Ai Yao, I'm sorry. Shu Jia. Meng Yao limps up the stairs as fast as he can manage, pushes past the women crowding his mother's room, and falls to his knees by the bed. Meng Shu's body is soaked in sweat. Her face is pale. She grasps Meng Yao's searching hand and holds it to her cheek, and he strokes her clammy skin with his thumb. Ai Yao. Meng Shu smiles at him, eyes shining with fever. Did you meet him? Did you meet your father? Yes, Mama, says Meng Yao. He is exactly like you said. That's good. That's very good, Ai Yao. My baby, my boy, I'm proud of you. I couldn't take your skin with me, Mama, Meng Yao says. He leans his forehead against his mother's shoulder. Next time, Ai Yao, Meng Shu says, a fluttering hand resting on top of Meng Yao's head. He will give it to you next time. Then we will go back to the sea together. Yes, Mama. Don't cry, Ai Yao, Meng Shu whispers. Don't cry. I'm so very proud of you, Ai Yao. Pyre. Meng Yao burns the body of his mother on the seashore, on a pyre made of driftwood. Then he gathers the ashes into a pouch and takes his clothes off. Changing skin is easy, and for a moment, the temptation to stay in it forever is almost impossible to escape. The sea is endless, the depths are calm, life is free. He could leave. He could refuse to switch to his human body again. But Jing Guangshan has his mother's skin. Jing Guangshan has his mother's skin, and Meng Yao has to get it back like he promised. Meng Yao emerges from the water and changes. When he looks toward the shore, it is empty. One day, Lan Xichun will ask Meng Yao why he chose to go to Qinghe after his mother died. Meng Yao will say that he chose the Nie sect because of Nie Mingzhui's well-known distaste for Jing Guangshan. But the truth is at once much simpler and more immediate. Meng Yao walks out of the sea, hangs the pouch with his mother's ashes around his neck, and vows never to swim again until he gets her other skin back from Jing Guangshan. Qinghe, tucked between mountain peaks and barren hills, is as far from this gentle seashore as he can think of. That Nie Mingzhui turned out to be a man Meng Yao didn't expect and couldn't anticipate was an accident. Many will accuse him, later, that he arrived at the Unclean Realm with a clear plan to seduce Chifengtsen and maneuver him off the righteous path. The truth is, instead, as follows. Nieming Chui finds a disciple crying under a tree, older than the rest and paler, a tumble of dark hair and eyes that are at once demure and hard as steel. Nieming Chui's heart decides, yes. He names Meng Yao his vice general. Meng Yao walks to Nieming Chui's quarters that night, takes off his outer robe, and kneels by the bed to wait. Nieming Chui arrives 2 hours later. Meng Yao, he says, face slack with shock. Zongju. Meng Yao smiles and bows deeply. I am here to serve you.
What are you doing? Get dressed properly.
Meng Yao glances up from under his eyelashes to see Nieming Chui flush red, to see his hand clutch the hilt of his saber. He swallows and bows deeper. This one will repay Nie Zongchu for his kindness.
Meng Yao!
Was it a misstep? Meng Yao lifts his head and frowns at the expression of outrage on Nieming Chui's face. Nieming Chui seems to recover himself enough to move, and he rushes to Meng Yao's side, gathering the neatly folded robe of black and gray from the side table. He drapes it around Meng Yao's shoulders.
No,
Nieming Chui says, still clutching the fabric shut.
You don't owe me anything. You definitely don't owe me this.
Shame burns high on Meng Yao's cheek.
Zongchu,
No. You don't owe those dogs anything. You don't owe me anything. You are a good man, a strong man, and you deserve the title for your merit. Do you understand?
Yes, Nie Zongchu, Meng Yao says.
It's a lie. He squirms under Nie Mingzhuai's gaze as he watches him dress, watches him leave, watches him the next morning, when Meng Yao lays his tea onto the table in front of him, and reaches for a comb to braid his hair. He doesn't understand. Not yet. Skin. Nieming Chui will one day ask Lan Xichun how he first met Meng Yao. Lan Xichun's ears will pink lightly. He will smile and busy himself with pouring tea. Then he will tell him he had first seen Meng Yao and Nieming Chui's retinue of disciples before his elevation to vice general. He will tell him that he caught Meng Yao standing, barefoot, in the shallows of a clear pond close to cloud recesses, and that Meng Yao looked like such a lonely and beautiful thing, he must have stared for quite some time before making his presence known.
So, Jun,
Meng Yao said, face pale as he scrambled out of the water.
I apologize. I didn't know I wasn't alone.
You have nothing to apologize for, Lan Xichun said. Lan Xichun will tell Nieming Chui that he fell in love with Meng Yao, reading poetry by the shore of the clearest lake in Gusu. Meng Yao will, much later, tell Nieming Chui that he fell in love with Lan Xichun with his feet ice cold and wet, heart hammering in his throat, and his skin's itching. Both of them. But this conversation is not happening for a while yet. Now the world is in turmoil, and the day finds Meng Yao once again by the steps of Koi Tower. He is standing one step behind Nieming Chui and looks at his father, sprawling imperiously on his throne shaped of golden peony petals and surrounded by the greatest sects to plan a war. The sect leaders argue. Meng Yao listens. That is his duty to his lord. He listens and watches where he cannot hear, pulls information like pearls on a string, and presents it to Nie Ming Tui with a bow and watches him nod and make the decisions he must. Meng Yao kneels and watches. He can feel his father's eyes on him the entire day, like many-legged things crawling down the back of his robes again and again and again. He isn't surprised when he receives the summons. He is surprised to see Jing Guangshan kneeling by a low table in front of an ornate tea set, a box of polished wood resting on his lap.
"I see you made something of yourself, boy, after all,"
Jing Guangshan says without offering him a seat. Meng Yao stays standing.
"You must have something of your mother in you, to wrap Nie Ming Tui so thoroughly around your little finger,"
Jing Guangshan continues.
"That is a skill that is as admirable as it is useful, though perhaps not for public consumption."
Jing Guangshan chuckles merrily. Meng Yao stands, head bowed. He imagines the sound of teeth breaking, skin splitting, blood gushing.
"You proved yourself useful, boy, and I always have need for useful things. What do you say, Meng Yao? Would you like this lord to give you a purpose?"
"I have a purpose, Jing Zongju," Meng Yao says, in the most polite way he knows how. "I serve Nie Ming Tui."
"But you are also my son, are you not?"
Jing Guangshan says with a smile that hides rows of sharp teeth underneath the surface.
"You said so yourself. You called me father."
Meng Yao bows.
"As Jing Zongshu says, don't you wish to prove yourself to me?"
"Once it was all I ever wanted," Meng Yao says quietly.
Jing Guangshan scoffs. "Breaking bones, tearing flesh, grinding teeth." "Fine, then."
Jing Guangshan places the box between them on the table. "Open it, boy." Meng Yao will once point at this moment as the beginning of his fall. It is a precipice, standing in his father's study. He can choose to move forward or away, to open the box or bow and leave. The Meng Yao of now thinks it isn't a choice, not really. The Meng Yao of the future will know otherwise. The world will have taught him hard lessons about choices. In this moment, however, Meng Yao carries the absolute truth of his aloneness in his heart, and so he steps forward and kneels in front of the table, reaches out, and places his hands on the latch that keeps the box shut. He knows what he will find. He knows, he knows, he knows.
"Go on."
Meng Yao lifts the lid. He always knew Meng Shi's other skin would be beautiful. The real thing doesn't compare to even his wildest imaginings. He raises a hand towards the box to touch it, but Jing Guangshan slams it closed before he can.
"All I ask," he says, "is for you to do a couple of favors for me. A good son to his father."
Meng Yao wants to spit in Jing Guangshan's face. He wants to reach for the dagger in his boot and bury it into his eye socket. That might be justice enough. That might be vengeance enough. But his father looks at him almost with kindness. His father says he could be useful. His father has his mother's skin. "Don't believe him," an instinct inside Meng Yao whispers. But another part of him, the part that wants this man to see him, that wants to keep the promises he makes, that wants to be a good son, somebody's, anybody's, is clutching at what he is given with the jealousy of a small child.
"What happens then?" he asks. "Then you will get your monster mother's skin to do with as you please,"
Jing Guangshan says, "once I have no more need of you."
"Unharmed,
if you wish." Meng Yao's first memory is of his mother, weeping. So is his last. He learned how to hope from her, and how to lose hope, too. This will not end well, he knows. He knows. But what choice is there for him? Meng Yao bows his head and says, "This one will serve you." "Very good. But I want something more than your word for it. I want to be certain of your loyalty." Meng Yao looks up. "What could I possibly give you, Jin Zongchu, if my word is not good enough?"
"I want something of yours that you will miss."
"What do you mean?" Meng Yao wants to ask. But then it dawns on him, all at once, what his father is asking of him. His fingers grow cold at the thought of it, rabbiting heart crawling up his throat inch by inch. What Jin Guangshan wants is taboo, anathema. Nobody touches an other skin who isn't chosen. Nobody takes it. Nobody owns it. It is a sacred thing, given in love, trust, family. But Jin Guangshan looks at him with expectant eyes and rests his hand on the box that holds Meng Shi's skin. Jin Guangshan, his father, the man his mother chose. Maybe it will be all right. Maybe, once he proves himself, Jin Guangshan will fulfill his promise and he will be free. Maybe, if he does well, he will earn his respect, if not his love. Meng Yao undresses under the scrutinizing eyes of his father, tells himself he is elated. He has found his mother's skin. He has seen it. He has almost touched it. In his heart of hearts, Meng Yao, the honest one, the one that is 20 years old and is full of yearning, feels the smallest and dirtiest he has ever felt in his life. Meng Yao lays his robes down layer by layer, kneels, digs his nails into the flesh of his shoulder, and pulls. His fingers shine with a golden glow. Catching the edge hurts like nothing ever did before. Once he's done, he lays the bloodied other skin on the table in front of Jin Guangshan. It shimmers in the light of candles, gold where his mother's is silver, dark where hers is light. It is a thing of beauty and horror. It is a thing of pain. There is a voice inside him that tells him what he just did is the unholiest wrong. Meng Yao breathes in and out 3 times. It's going to be fine. Everything is going to be fine.
"You may leave now," Jin Guangshan says. "I will send word if I have need of you."
Meng Yao stands, wraps 2 of his outermost robes around his shoulders, and bows. Heart. What gives Meng Yao away isn't the dried blood under his fingernails or the circles under his eyes. It isn't even the whispered rumors Nie Mingchui hears floating around the main hall the morning the Nie sect is set out to leave. Disgrace. She saw him, do you think? Clothes clutched in his hands, Jin Zongxu's rooms after midnight. Whore. He saw too. There are always rumors circulating about Meng Yao. They are almost always lies. What gives him away in the end is the way he refuses to look Lan Xichen in the eye when they bow goodbye. Nie Mingchui watches him on their way out of Lan Ling and into the countryside that stretches between them and Qinghe. He watches and catalogues, a wince of pain, ashen skin, limp arms. The smile he gives Nie Mingchui when he hands him a water skin is brittle and false. On the 3rd night, Meng Yao doesn't return to their evening campfire for hours, and Mingchui decides to investigate. This close to Qinghe, the landscape is a carpet of gentle hills and forests. The villages that scatter by the road swear allegiance to the Nie sect, but belong really to no one. And the rice fields around them carve curling images of blue-green water into the hillsides. Nie Mingtui finds Meng Yao by the shore of a stream, nestled in a pine grove. He kneels, clothed in the water. His shoulders heave with huge, sobbing breaths.
Meng Yao,
Nie Mingtui says. Meng Yao stiffens.
Meng Yao, what's wrong?
Meng Yao rises and turns, still standing in the water. His eyes look dark and hollow in the low light. Nie Zongchu, this servant apologizes for...
None of that now. What are you standing in the water for? You'll catch your death in this weather.
Don't worry about me, Nie Zongchu. Meng Yao smiles. This servant is fine.
Meng Yao...
Nie Mingtui shakes his head and steps closer. He offers an arm to help Meng Yao out. But Meng Yao wades to the shore without touching a single finger.
It stings. Something happened at Koi Tower, didn't it?
Nie Mingtui asks. Meng Yao glances up, eyes on him but not really looking. And Mingtui recognizes it. A rejection. He will not get answers out of Meng Yao tonight.
You can tell me.
He presses on anyway. It is nothing, Nie Zongchu. Please trust me.
Always.
Nie Mingtui says. In this moment, standing under rustling pine trees with the stream behind and the light of the campfire ahead, this is still true. Trust. It lasts until Meng Yao lies enough. Good. His childhood in his mother's house teaches Meng Yao much about cruelty. It is the cruelty people inflict upon one another in quiet. The ones amongst soft sheets, softer words, the kind that is muffled and domestic, and so often invisible. It teaches him the cruelty of children and the cruelty of men. The Sunshot campaign teaches Meng Yao about the righteousness of violence.
This is dishonorable,
Nie Mingtui mutters under his breath, his hands clenched into fists where he rests them against the table. Meng Yao's map and notes spread out around him in tidy sections.
Meng Yao, this is...
This is how you win this, Meng Yao says softly. A victory with minimal cost to your army, Nie Zongchu, while dealing a significant blow to the enemy's supply line.
It's underhanded.
You asked for my opinion, replies Meng Yao, and if his voice is cutting, so be it. And I gave it.
Where did you get this information from anyway?
Nie Mingtui asks, tapping a finger against a piece of paper marked by rows of Meng Yao's tidy handwriting. Meng Yao shifts. Some things are best only for me to know, Nie Zongchu. Meng Yao looks down, an image of demure deference.
Nie Mingtui scoffs. I don't like it.
I understand.
It isn't honorable,
Nie Mingtui says, slapping the desk once, hard. Meng Yao doesn't flinch. If you permit me to speak freely, Nie Zongchu, nothing about winning a war is ever honorable, and we must win. We must. Nie Mingtui looks at him, eyebrows drawn.
Since when did you need to ask me for permission to speak your mind, Ayao?
Meng Yao holds his gaze and smiles. The howling, vicious part of his heart that loves this man with the entirety of his being clenches in hurt and admiration. Since Nie Zongchu started looking for lies in everything I say.
He says it because it hurts, because it's true, because Nie Mingtui's scrutiny leaves him feeling like a naked, small, and dirty thing. But another part of him revels in it. Another part of him, the one thrown out of his father's house, the one that is permanently stained by his mother's shame, the one that, despite everything, yearns for Nie Mingtui to look at him with a smile again. That part, that violent and spiteful part, wants to bare himself and point at his scars and scream, "Look at all I do for you. Look at all I suffer for you. Look at all I lie for you. Look at me." Meng Yao's heart howls. "Look at me, my treachery, my vice, my desire. Look at my dogged loyalty and my love and my fear. Look at my dirtied heart and see." What would Nie Mingtui say if he knew, if he heard, if he looked hard enough to see what monstrous things Meng Yao did to protect himself, the Nie sect, and their secrets? He doesn't know how to say any of it. Meng Yao is a liar, after all. "Fine,"
Nie Mingtui says, but his mouth twists into an unhappy frown. Meng Yao bows and leaves to make the necessary arrangements. The assassins that come that night are anticipated. Meng Yao is the spider crouching at the heart of the web, and Jing Guangshan's men aren't subtle. He waits for them on the rooftop above Nie Mingtui's quarters, waits until they are in range of the array he set up weeks earlier. Then he burns the talisman he plucks from his sleeve. The men immolate into ash in perfect silence. His father will be angry, but Nie Mingtui can't die. Not yet. This is what Meng Yao tells himself, that Nie Mingtui holds a strategic importance that cannot be dismissed until the time is right, that his presence is too significant, too powerful.
"You are compromised," Jing Guangshan's next missive says.
Meng Yao throws it into the fire once he reads it, and banishes the memory of the kiss Nie Mingtui gave him 3 years before from his head. The press of lips, the bite of teeth, his lord whispering against his neck,
"Ayao, ayao, ayao."
Nie Huaisang interrupted them before Nie Mingtui could unravel him any further. Good, Meng Yao thought then, body aflame and heart full of wanting. His never-sleeping mind running calculations after calculations. Good. They haven't talked about it since. Then Meng Yao became what he is now, a spy in a tower, a spider in his net, and Nie Mingtui has found his desire easily overpowered by mistrust. The two of them play this game many times. They will have the same argument for as long as the Nie sect makes up the Sunshot Alliance's sword, for as long as it is necessary. Meng Yao accepts this. He wishes this. He wants to see Nie Mingtui rise in glory with Lan Xichen at his side, a figure in dark and a figure in white, unsullied and victorious. Meng Yao will gladly pave their way with corpses. He would do even more. He would do everything. He would give them all that he could, everything his body and his mind was able to give. If it wasn't for Jing Guangshan, if it wasn't for his mother, if it wasn't for his own wretched heart that always wanted more, it would remain like this. He would watch Lan Xichen hold Nie Mingtui's hand from the shadow they cast. He would do what he had to keep them safe. He would keep his head down and be good for his father and get Meng Shi's skin back. But Meng Yao wants. Meng Yao wants. Meng Yao wants. He binds himself with promises to his mother, to his father, to his lord, to his love. I will be good, Meng Yao promises the world. I will be good. He wants to be. He wants to be so good. But it is not to be. Reach. Lan Xichun knows almost everything there is to know about love. His father lived it. His brother lived it. His uncle lived it. He knows the twists and crevices of wrongness in love, the gentleness of it, the rightness of it, the enormous, all-consuming weight of it. He is a Lan. He carries it all, too. Trying to unpick what exactly goes wrong between Nie Mingchui and Meng Yao is as useless as it is impossible. They are, in their fundamentals, opposites. A Yao's craftiness to Mingchui's straightforward nature. A Yao's deeply buried hurts to Meng Yao's brash and bright bursts of anger. They are fire and water. Together, impossible to stop. Apart, a tragedy waiting to happen. Xichun loves them both helplessly.
He lies to me,
Mingchui says into Xichun's shoulder. Xichun shifts to tuck him closer.
He lies to me about that fucker Jingguangshan. He lies to me about sect affairs. He doesn't look me in the eyes anymore.
He is doing what his job requires of him, says Lan Xichun softly.
He always has been a slippery fucker,
Mingchui grumbles.
Maybe we are too blind to see it.
See what?
What he is, what he's becoming.
Mingchui Xiong, admonishes Xichun, making his displeasure known with a flick against Mingchui's ear. Do you hear what you're saying? A Yao is a good man, working towards a goal we all share. He is by your side. He has never done anything against you.
That we know of,
Mingchui mutters. Then, with a note of stubbornness, he adds,
he's still a demon.
He's our demon.
Mingchui scoffs at that. Maybe once. I'm not sure if he is or could be anymore.
Xichun sighs, carding his fingers through Mingchui's unbound hair. Mingchui tilts his head into it, and Xichun presses a kiss to his forehead. Give him time, Mingchui.
How much more time?
Until the war ends, or however much more he needs, Xichun says, turns in Mingchui's arms and pulls him close to his chest. Mingchui huffs and presses a kiss against his collarbone.
You are too good for this world, Xichun.
Lan Xichun knows almost everything there is to know about love. He is living it, as all Lans before him have. He loves once, he loves fiercely, and he never stops loving. Even if his chosen fingers are soaked in blood, even if they never look him in the eye again. Xichun's love is a quiet thing. But that doesn't make it any less encompassing. I'm merely patient, Mingchui. I can be patient for you, too, if you wish me to be. Nie Mingchui huffs, then extricates himself from Xichun's embrace to roll on top of him, bracket him with his arms, and rub his nose against his cheek.
Just stay, Xichun, for a bit longer.
River. Meng Yao reads his father's letter one more time.
With Chi Feng Zun dead, the Wens will take you in and celebrate you as a hero. No question about it. Make it so. Make it believable. Make yourself invaluable to them. Then you will find Ming Chu in the sunless citadel and report to him anything you find out about Wen Rohan, his troops, his battle tactics, his advisors, his supply lines. Expect us in Qishan 6 months hence. Your reward will be yours then. Meng Yao takes a deep breath, holds the paper to the candle flame, and watches it burn. Then he rolls the corpse of the unfortunate Jean Messenger up in the carpet he fell upon. The bundle is heavy when he shoulders it, but Meng Yao has carried heavier things in his life. What is one more death to the Count? You will kill Nie Mingtui. You will make it public. You will then flee beyond enemy lines to secure the Yin Iron for me. With Chi Feng Zun dead, the Wens will take you in. The lines are sober and tidy on perfumed paper, nondescript, sealed with a plain, unmarked wax stamp. It is the last of many Meng Yao receives from his father. None of the ones before made him feel sick to his stomach as much as this one. Meng Yao thinks of Nie Mingtui dead. Meng Yao thinks of Lan Xichen, dead. Meng Yao thinks of his mother, dead. Dead by his hands, his hands, his hands, his hands. Mama, he whispers as he rolls the corpse into the river. Mama, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I will find a way, another way, I promise. But this I cannot do. Will you forgive me? Meng Yao looks down, watches with detached fascination, the blood drying on his hands. What would his mother say? Would Meng Shi forgive him for wanting to jealously protect this one thing in his life, like he never protected anything else, not even her? I will find a way, he says to the river, and hopes it will carry his words to heaven. His walk back to his rooms is a slow, arduous process. Avoiding the guards is easy enough, but the messenger got a good hit in with a hidden dagger before Meng Yao could finish him off. The shoulder wound runs deeper than Meng Yao would like. He will need to patch it up before he can get to cleaning up his sitting room. Meng Yao presses a palm against his shoulder, circulates his qi to slow the blood seeping through his robes, and makes a mental list of tasks he needs to complete before he can sleep. What he doesn't expect is to find Lan Xichen pacing frantically through his rooms. The rooms with the ashes of the letter still on the desk, the carpet missing, the floor stained with blood. Lan Xichen turns when he hears the door open and rushes to Meng Yao's side with a sense of relieved urgency.
Ah Yao, where were you? Are you all right? I thought...
One day, Meng Yao will stop feeling like Lan Xichen's every glance cuts him open to spill all the dirty things inside onto the floor. Tonight, he can only hide his hands in his sleeves and bow, wincing as his wound pulls.
Zhou Jun,
what happened? Asks Lan Xichen, stepping over the smear of blood on the floor and catching Meng Yao's arms. He lifts him up from his bow, takes his hands, and exhales at the sight of the gore stuck under Meng Yao's fingernails.
Ah Yao, you're injured.
It's only a scratch, Meng Yao says. But Lan Xichen doesn't listen. He catches his wrist, checks his qi, and huffs a worried breath.
Ah Yao, what happened? Who hurt you? The blood on the floor isn't yours. I checked. Whose is it? Where are they? What did they do? We need to call Mingtui. We need to...
Zhou Jun, don't! Meng Yao grasps Lan Xichen's sleeve, looks up at him with an expression of open alarm.
You needn't bother Nie Songju with this.
Ah Yao?
If I tell you to trust me, will you?
Meng Yao asks, but he already suspects the answer. He can see the shape of the next hour clearly. Nie Mingtui will come, will accuse him of murder, will think him a liar, will think all his suspicions were finally proven right. Meng Yao looks up at Lan Xichen's kind, dearly loved face and asks himself, is this the day it will happen? Is this the day he is caught? The day he will die or is kicked out of Qinghe at last? But Lan Xichun's soft sigh and the hand that rises to cradle Meng Yao's cheek doesn't fit the pattern Meng Yao's mind calculates. And that makes little sense. I trust Ai Yao, Lan Xichun says. Meng Yao stills. You trust me, he repeats. Lan Xichun nods. I can't tell you what happened, Meng Yao presses on. Not yet, maybe never. I can't tell you, I can't. Jingguangshan, Meng Shi, Nie Mingchui. I trust Ai Yao. Will Ai Yao trust me in return? Lan Xichun asks, and Meng Yao can only nod, can only follow as he is drawn to the wash basin in the corner, as Lan Xichun pours water and soap over his fingers, as he washes Meng Yao's hand gently until the water runs clear. I will call for a healer, Lan Xichun says, but Meng Yao shakes his head. I have bandages and medicine. Lan Xichun doesn't ask why he keeps these things in his quarters. He doesn't ask anything else at all. He simply helps Meng Yao sit, pulls the bloodied robes away from his shoulder, and sets about cleaning the wound. The disinfectant stings. Lan Xichun's hands are gentle as he wipes Meng Yao's shoulder clean, lays an herbal poultice over it, and winds a bandage across Meng Yao's arm and chest to secure it. He does a much better job than Meng Yao could have by himself. How do I repay your kindness, So Jun? Meng Yao asks. This is not the question that he wants to ask, but it is the closest he can get. He cannot ask why because he is afraid of the answer. Because Lan Xichun's softness hurts him more tonight than it helps. Lan Xichun gives him a thoughtful look, then nods. I want Ai Yao to find me or Meng Chui the next time he needs assistance. Meng Yao looks down. The hems of his robes are stained green from wet grass. I can't promise that, Zhou Jin. You know I can't. Lan Xichun nods again. I want you only to try. Meng Yao takes a heavy breath, allows his fingers to trail down Lan Xichun's arm for a beautiful, heady moment. Then he stands up, rights his robes, and bows. I should see to the cleanup, Zhou Jin. Thank you for your assistance. Ai Yao. Lan Xichun touches his exposed wrist gently. You should never hesitate to ask us for help. You are important. To me, to Meng Chui. You know that, right? Meng Yao looks up, smiles despite his burning eyes. He can't not. Sometimes he thinks he will never be able to turn away from this man. This one is grateful. This one is grateful, Zhou Jun. Lan Xichun smiles again and doesn't call him out on his clumsy phrasing. He only squeezes Meng Yao's hands before he leaves. The idea springs into Meng Yao's head sometime later. He is on his knees, elbow deep in cold, soapy water. An idea that might save him, might save his lord from Jingguangshan, that might protect Lan Xichun, that might get Meng Yao his revenge. Mama, the world might burn for this, he says to the empty room, the freshly washed floor, the ashes of Jingguangshan's letter on his writing table. Mama, I will burn for this, but gods know I don't care anymore. The breeze rustles the curtains through the open window. Meng Yao inhales. He can smell snow, autumn grass, the river. The scars where his other skin was peeled off his body ache. I will get the yin iron. Then I will kill Jingguangshan with it. It is a promise. Not his last one, but perhaps the most important of them all.
The darkest corner of
Nie, blotted out. Meng Yao leaves the letter in front of Nie Mingchui's door. He knows the Lans are early risers and that Lan Zichen will find it first. He counts on it. He counts on Lan Zichen's heart, at least, if not his promise. He doesn't think he can trust promises yet. Still, hope is a tenacious beast. Meng Yao clutches the letter sealed with the Nie signet ring he has left on his writing desk and whispers, "Prove me wrong, Lan Zichen, please." Whatever happens, he knows he might not live to see the fallout. Meng Yao, second in command to Chu Fengzhen, leaves the unclean realm in the dead of night, in the middle of winter. Nobody sees him go. The next morning, scores of Nie sect disciples comb through the compound grounds. Chu Fengzhen has survived an assassination attempt by the hands of his own vice general, the story goes. And it spreads through the cultivation world the way fire catches dry grass. Lan Zichen delivered the news himself, they say, the morning after Meng Yao escaped the unclean realm. Chu Fengzhen is lightly injured, but the shock of the betrayal caused a minor qi deviation that needs careful, secluded monitoring. Nie Huaisang is acting sect leader in his absence. Meng Yao gets himself into a fight in a wine house in Outer Qinghe, then leaves himself, his torn robe, cracked ribs, and bruises, conveniently in the way of a Wen army patrol. He bows to Wen Rohan. He kisses the ring on his hand. He walks among corpses. He dines with them. He dreams with them. He engineers battles and watches the Sunshot Alliance lose. It is the loneliest year of Meng Yao's life. It is the year he will not talk about to anybody, ever. The only burden he will carry alone for the rest of his days. It is not his worst scar. The next time Meng Yao sees Lan Zichen and Nie Mingchui, it is over the smoking corpse of Wen Rohan, and some of the world rights itself at last.
"Meng Yao,"
Nie Mingchui says, expression slack with disbelief. The yin iron hovers above Meng Yao's outstretched hand, and he feels it. Power, menace, the deep, terrible, heady resentment it holds in its fragile shell. Meng Yao wipes the blood off his face.
"Nie Zongchu,"
he gasps, and his voice sounds wrong. "Move."
"Meng Yao,"
Nie Mingchui says again. Is he angry? Despairing? It's so hard to tell through the haze, the billowing black smoke. From the open doorway, Meng Yao can see a white flash. Lan Zichen.
"Ah, Yao, let it go,"
Lan Zichen says. He is holding onto Nie Mingchui's outstretched arm, sword sheathed, blood flecking his face and the front of his robes. Meng Yao's eyes clear, then blur again. Nie Mingchui is holding Lan Zichen back. Good. The yin iron surges and Meng Yao grits his teeth over an agonized cry. His hold on the thing is fragile, tenuous. He can feel his meridians burn with the excess of it. He is not strong enough for this. He has to do this.
"Soojin,"
Meng Yao says through gritted teeth, "let me, please, let me finish this." His heart is screaming. "I worked so hard for this. Let me do this so I can be free of this burden at last." Nie Mingchui lifts Baxia.
"Come to your senses, Meng Yao. What you want, it's madness."
It is so like him, Meng Yao thinks, in a detached part of himself that is free of the pain and the pressure of the yin iron and everything else. It is so like him to only see the clear path, the light path, the righteous path. The thought fills him with a sense of burning, a sense of overwhelming affection. "You spread the rumor like I asked. You hunted for me like I asked. You denounced me like I asked, Nie Mingchui." Meng Yao says, the corners of his lips lift into a smile, helpless to resist it. You trusted me. You really did.
Ai Yao, says Lan Xichun softly. Ai Yao, why do you want to kill your father?
Meng Yao closes his fingers around the yin iron. The world around him starts to burn.
For us monsters,
he says, but he is unsure whether the other two can hear him. For my mother. For me. From that moment, most things are a blur of dark memory. Lan Xichun and Ye Mingtui will tell him later that the surge of the yin iron threw the two of them and several disciples through three walls, and that when Rohan's throne room collapsed with the backlash, they will tell him that Meng Yao emerged from the rubble and enveloped in black smoke like a ghost of devastation. They will tell him about Jing Guangshan, the golden net he cast around Meng Yao, and the terrible, terrible scream that ripped stone and twisted trees and blew cultivators off their swords when the net touched Meng Yao's skin. By the time Nie Mingtui and Lan Xichun reach the cliff, it is too late. Jing Guangshan is gone, and Meng Yao is gone with him.
Xichun,
Nie Mingtui says, stricken. He holds a piece of Jing Guangshan's golden net in his hands. Lan Xichun takes a sharp breath.
This,
the pelt of a demonic beast.
Nie Mingtui nods.
Look.
Nie Mingtui presses a talisman against the thing, and the edges of it blur until the length of golden rope turns into something else. A patch of human skin, bloodied.
Ah Yao, says Lan Xichun, alarmed. Do you think...
We need to get him out of there now.
And so it happens that on the eve of victory, the day that marks the end of years and years of war, its two most illustrious heroes disappear before the celebrations start. An Ouyang sect member will later say he saw Qifengzhen and Zhoujun fly off a cliff, balancing on Lan Xichun's Shouyue, heading west. Nobody pays him any mind. Some of them look for the traitor among Yao's body, but the ruin of the sunless citadel yields nothing. Ah Yao. Zhoujun, you have told me time and time again that you trust me. You and Qifengzhen have given me your faith and love once, when I scarcely knew how to receive it. For that I am sorry, and for what I am about to do I am sorry too. I can only beg you to give me your trust one last time. This morning, tell the Unclean Realm that I attacked and injured Nie Mingtui. Tell them that his injuries and the betrayal weakened him. Make sure whatever rumors emerge are encouraged and are spread beyond enemy lines. Expect my letters at the end of the third week each month. Do not trust Jing Guangshan. He wants Nie Mingtui's life, and yours too, if he can get away with it. Watch your back. Tell Qifengzhen I'm sorry. Zhoujun, you will win this war. I will be there to see you victorious. It's a promise. Meng Yao. Father. What remains of Meng Yao in the end? He wakes up, naked in what he recognizes to be one of Koi Tower's demonic confinement chambers. His muscles burn with an ache that cannot be from natural exertion, his human skin bleeding on the flagstones below. He is suspended mid-air, he realizes, his shoulders protesting the pull of the chains above. Jingguangshan sits on a cushion a few paces ahead and pours tea into a gold-gilded jade cup.
"You're awake, monster child," he says. "Took you long enough."
Meng Yao's throat is too tight to speak, but he manages to dredge up enough saliva and blood from his mouth to spit. It doesn't get very far, but the look on his father's face is still satisfying enough.
"Still no manners, I see. I have to say, despite my early expectations, you really outdid yourself with Wen Rohan. Nie Mingzhui, living and breathing is an inconvenience, yes, but the Wen dog is finally dead, and you even delivered the yin iron to me. How courteous."
"They will come for you," Meng Yao rasps. "Chifengzhen, Zhoujin, they will come."
"Not much use for you, that," replies Jingguangshan with an unconcerned smile. "You will be dead by then."
Meng Yao laughs. Like that matters. Like his life is worth anything at all anymore.
"Funny, I see."
Jingguangshan drains his cup and leans forward, smile kind and warm on his jovial face.
"Consider the tragedy of it. You, the traitor of Qinghe. You, loyal dog to that demon Nie Mingzhui. The irony. Did he ever notice how you lusted over him like a bitch in heat? What a sight to behold, that."
Meng Yao inhales, exhales.
"Did he fuck you in the end?"
Jingguangshan muses as he pours again.
"Gods, I hope he did. What a sight that must have been."
"Wish you could have seen it, father?" Meng Yao asks, smiling even as his human skin burns and burns and burns. "Would it have been just the thing for you, watching your only son sullied?"
"I will kill you anyway,"
replies Jingguangshan softly. "It will be slow, regardless of how much you think you can provoke me."
"Oh, I think I can provoke you quite a bit."
"Maybe I should make you scream some more. Maybe that will shut you up."
"It doesn't matter, father," Meng Yao says, with a knife-edged smile. His teeth are bloody. "Can't you see? There is nothing else you can do to me. Nothing you can take from me."
"Even your monster mother's precious skin."
Meng Yao closes his eyes. A tear finally spills from between his lashes and rolls down his cheek. "Mama," he thinks. "Mama." "You burned it the minute I left your quarters that day, didn't you, father?"
That makes Jingguangshan pause.
"The demon walker binding net," Meng Yao continues. "The kind you used. The one. I know it. You need two pelts. You need two pelts to make it. One to braid it. That was mine, wasn't it? And the ashes of another. That was my mother's. You burned my mother's skin." Jingguangshan puts his cup down, rises, and steps close to stroke his hand down Meng Yao's cheek. Meng Yao doesn't flinch. There is nothing left in him strong enough to feel anything other than grief and the crushing weight of his own failure.
"Clever boy," Jingguangshan murmurs. "Aren't you a clever boy? You will be so useful to me, so useful for your father. Your bones will be made into medicine to strengthen Zishuan. Your meat will feed the dogs and they will be immortal. Your hair will be made into talismans, every last bit. Doesn't that make you happy, or at least a little, to be a useful son at last?"
"Fuck you," Meng Yao mutters. The hit would have made him double over if he was standing. Like this, he can only cry out as his father's fist breaks at least three of his ribs.
"You're too late, father," Meng Yao says,
before finally passing out for good. There is nothing left of me for you to break. After that, everything goes finally, blessedly silent. Faith. Meng Yao's favorite memory is of his mother, smiling. Meng Shi is beautiful and soft and kind, and Meng Yao loves her the most in the entire world. Loving her hurts, losing her hurts, and breaking his promise to her hurts even more. What remains of Meng Shi is a canvas pouch of ashes, hidden under the mattress of a bed in Qinghe. Meng Yao's dream is a quiet thing. He stands in the shallows by the familiar Lanling shoreline, sheer rock face hugging a curving line of sand that drops into blue-green water. The waves caress his ankles, and their touch whispers a familiar temptation. "Come," the sea says. "Come and be free." Meng Yao wades in deeper and changes. It is the most profoundly simple thing he has ever done. When he emerges after hours of drifting with the currents, he turns to the shoreline more out of muscle memory than actual expectation. He knows what he will see. The cliffs and the seagulls, blue misted hills in the distance, drifting sand. But the shore is not empty. Standing barefoot, just a hair's breadth away from the water, is a figure, dressed in soft pink and white. Meng Yao is running before he can catch himself, making the decision to do so. "Anyang!" he calls. "Anyang! Anyang!" Meng Shi smiles, but her eyes remain hollow and sad. Meng Yao stops a few paces before he could touch. He wants to reach out so badly. He wants to hold his mother's hand. He wants to wrap his arms around her shoulders and burrow his face into her hair.
"Mama," he says, uncertain. "My boy," says Meng Shi. Her voice is a thin, ghostly thing.
Meng Yao finds himself awash with a crushing sensation of sadness. It is fresh grief over his mother's still warm body, the horror of watching her other skin laid out in a box. Meng Shi watches, impassive, as her son falls to his knees in front of her.
"Mama," he whispers, feeling buried under the weight of the 10 years since her passing. "Mama, I failed you. I failed you. My father, he... my boy..."
Meng Shi says, and it feels somehow even more fragile.
"Forgive me, Mama. Can you forgive me?"
Fabric rustles as Meng Shi kneels. Meng Yao can feel a hand that weighs much less than a human's ought to rest upon his head. He leans into the caress without thinking.
"Is Ai Yao happy?" asks Meng Shi softly. "Is Ai Yao well?" "I don't know," Meng Yao says. "I made many mistakes. I did things, horrible things. I threw away so much for a thing that was worthless in the end. Is this what you wanted from me? I wonder."
"Is Ai Yao loved?" the memory of Meng Shi asks. Meng Yao looks up. His mother's smile is a kind, gentle thing.
"I was once, maybe."
"I hope you are," Meng Shi continues, as if he hasn't spoken.
"My Ai Yao deserves to be loved well. His heart is so big. He loves so fiercely. His mother is so proud of him."
Meng Yao stares at his mother's ghostly face. Hot tears roll down his cheeks, and Meng Shi wipes them away one by one.
"I want Ai Yao to be happy. That is my only wish."
I wish you'd told me earlier, Meng Yao says softly. He reaches out, touches his mother's shoulders. It feels at once solid and like a veil of silk, transparent and easy to tear. He slides his hands gently up and draws the ghost close. His heart is a heavy stone, a lead weight pulling down. But his mother is here. His mother is here. His mother is here. I love you, Mama. I love you, my son. The scent of jasmine and lilacs envelop them as they kneel in the water, the sky stretching blue and infinite above. Meng Yao wakes up. It is unexpected. There will be stories about this much later. The traitor of Qinghe carried out of the burning Jin estate in the arms of his lord and his lord's cultivation partner. There will be stories told about the traitor who wasn't a traitor at all, and his father who was. They will say that he was asleep for a year and a day, and that Zhou Jun and Qi Fengzun never left his side during this time. They will say that he was human and that he was not. Some will say he was a god, some that he was a demon. Many of those things are true, others not. Meng Yao wakes up to the sensation of warmth and the presence of foreign spiritual energy circulating in his meridians. He opens his eyes. He watches, dumbfounded, the face of Zhou Jun, asleep.
Oh, Yao,
says Nie Ming Tui behind him, and suddenly the physical sensations his body is easing into begin to make sense. The bulk of muscles his back rests against, the palm pressing against his chest over his underrobe. The spiritual energy tangling with his own is familiar, after all.
Songchu,
Meng Yao rasps. His throat feels raw.
Don't talk,
Nie Ming Tui says, shifting.
Your vocal cords are still fragile.
How?
Meng Yao presses on anyway. Nie Ming Tui sighs.
Sichen is a bully, and the Qinghe healers are very overworked.
Oh.
Meng Yao attempts to move. His muscles ache, but he manages to shift his legs into a more comfortable position. The blankets are warm, and he settles into them, folds his hands under his head, stretches his spine. Nie Ming Tui waits until he stops moving, then curls himself around him again. It is, somehow, the strangest and most overwhelming thing of them all.
Songchu, Meng Yao protests weakly. What are you doing?
Helping you circulate your qi,
Nie Ming Tui supplies helpfully, fingers flexing briefly above Meng Yao's heart.
You were beaten, burnt, cursed, flogged, and tortured. Then you went into qi deviation. Then you caught some sort of lung sickness. And then, well, needless to say, the healers had their hands full with you.
How long? The Sunshot campaign ended 5 months ago,
Lan Xichen says, then opens his eyes. His lashes are wet.
Ayao. I'm not dead,
Meng Yao says. The statement feels strange and alien on his tongue. Unexpected.
Not for lack of trying,
Nie Ming Tui replies, and he moves away from Meng Yao for the first time since he woke up. Meng Yao turns, alarmed, but Lan Xichen rests a hand on his shoulder until he settles. Nie Ming Tui sits up and digs the heels of his palms into his eye sockets. Meng Yao finds himself feeling very small and untethered at once. The implications of the scene he finds himself in sink in one by one. The bed they clearly share, Nie Ming Tui and Lan Xichen in their underrobes, the weakness of his own golden core, his muscles, his spine, his scars pull, his joints ache. watching Nie Mingchui's tense, rigid back, is still somehow the worst of them all.
"Songchu," he says, plaintive.
"If you didn't spend the last few months working very hard at dying, I would strangle you myself,"
Nie Mingchui says, throwing a cutting and watery glance over his shoulder.
"Reckless, foolish, underhanded."
Meng Yao swallows. "Songchu, I... Qingguangshan is dead," Lan Xichen says. His expression grows cold and satisfied for a split second before smoothing out again. "It was mostly by accident."
"Mostly," Nie Mingchui adds. "But I'm not saying it wasn't gratifying."
"He was truly a horrible man."
"Good riddance."
Nie Mingchui nods in agreement. Meng Yao glances between them, helpless.
"You killed him," he says. "You killed Jingguangshan."
Lan Xichen nods. Meng Yao's heart swells, breaks, mends itself again. His eyes burn.
"He wanted you dead," he rushes to explain, feeling frantic and overwhelmed with the need to spill everything, to say it all before it's too late, before his cowardice gets the better of him again. "That night, he sent me a letter. He wanted Songchu dead, and you... He wanted me to... I have done so many awful things, Seujin, but that I couldn't do. I couldn't... Ayao,"
Lan Xichen says, laying his palm flat against his chest.
"I tried. I tried so hard to be good. I wanted to be good, Seujin, Songchu, but I don't think I'm capable of it."
Meng Yao is crying. It is mortifying.
"There are so many rotten things," he says, beating his fist once against his heart. "In here."
"We know,"
Nie Mingchui says quietly. Meng Yao tries to calm his ragged breathing.
"I left to protect you. I did it all to protect you. Everything. Most things. The worst things."
"We know," Lan Xichen says, tucking a stray lock of hair behind Meng Yao's ear. Meng Yao keens and leans into his hand without giving his body permission, burrows himself into Lan Xichen's reaching arms, and clutches at the opening of his robe, as if afraid that if he lets go, the world will crack into pieces again.
"Don't let me go,"
he cries into Lan Xichen's shoulder. He can hear Nie Mingchui ask a question, but can't make out the words. Somebody else curls around his back, a warmth missed and desired and rejected again and again and again.
"Don't let me go. Please don't let me go. Don't let me go again."
"I promise," Lan Xichen says. Behind, Meng Yao can feel Nie Mingchui nod against the back of his neck. Song. Meng Yao loves Lan Xichen, and it is a slow thing, a burning ember, a familiar song, hands held under flowering trees and the quiet of Qinghe winters. Meng Yao loves Nie Mingchui like a most treasured enemy, a cold star, a thing to be feared, a thing to be respected, a thing to be admired and cared for with a fierceness brightly burning. It takes Meng Yao another 3 months to fully recover, and by then summer is ending in Qinghe. The sun is low in the sky when he steps outside their shared rooms for the first time. The air is crisp and smells like rain, and the clouds stretch above his head into infinity. The first thing he sees when he looks around is Nie Mingchui and Lan Xichen, standing under a tree crowned with golden leaves. The air shimmers with floating trails of spider silk. Meng Yao waves. Nia Ming Tui touches Lan Xichen's shoulder, and they turn around together. Nia Ming Tui dimpling as he smiles wide enough to show teeth.
Oh, Yao, he says. Look what Hoi Sung delivered for you today.
Lan Xichen spreads his arms. Between them, shimmering gold and silver in the light of the sun, dipping towards the horizon, stretches Meng Yao's second skin. Meng Yao's knees buckle. Lan Xichen catches him, smiles, and offers the skin for him to take. We will travel to the sea tomorrow, he says, and draws Nie Ming Tui closer so they can bracket Meng Yao between the two of them. The touch is grounding. Meng Yao feels himself spin somewhere far away, unmoored except for the arms that circle around his waist and shoulders. The other skin is cool in his hands.
I, he says, voice breaking.
He takes a deep breath, starts again.
I don't know how to put it back.
Lan Xichen pulls back enough to tilt Meng Yao's chin upward, to stroke his thumbs across Meng Yao's wet cheeks.
There is a ritual, he says. The Forbidden Library has a copy.
Meng Yao surges up, clutches Lan Xichen's robe with his free hand.
When?
Tomorrow,
Nie Ming Tui says, and leans down to kiss the top of Meng Yao's head.
If you're good.
I'm always good. A Yao is always good,
Lan Xichen says at the same time. And somehow that is more. More. Meng Yao feels himself flush, and he squirms in their arms until Nie Ming Tui steps back. Meng Yao clutches the skin to his chest and bows like that, fingers buried in the soft gold-silver fur, and scale.
This one is grateful.
Nie Ming Tui scoffs as Lan Xichen reaches out, catches Meng Yao by the wrist and lifts him up.
No, A Yao. No bowing. Not when it's only us. Not for this.
Meng Yao wonders if he will ever come to a stage in his recovery when every little thing doesn't make him cry anymore. Being half-dead does that to a person, Hoi Sung will tell him later, over three empty jars of scented Qinghe wine. They will share a look. Hoi Sung will grimace in sympathy. Then he will drain his full cup in one go. Meng Yao takes Nie Ming Tui and Lan Xichen to the shore in Lan Ling the next day. They help him undress, stripping him of robes of gray and gold, underlayers of black and white, until he stands in the ankle-high water naked as the day he was born, shivering in the late summer wind. The three of them kneel in the shallows. Lan Xichen drapes the gold-silver skin across Meng Yao's shoulder. There is a flash of light. Scars pull. Meng Yao breathes out. It isn't perfect. The skin fits, but the feel of it is foreign. Its golden sheen is marred by long patches of silver, and when he touches them, they thrum with an energy that is at once unfamiliar and feels like home. It feels like Meng Shi's hand in his hair.
Go,
Lan Xichen says, and presses a kiss to his forehead.
We will be here.
Meng Yao takes a deep, ragged breath, wades into the ocean, and switches.
Home.
When Meng Yao emerges later, he changes into his human skin, facing the ocean. Then he turns towards the shore. He sees two figures, in white and black, standing ankle deep in shallow water, waiting. The end.
Scare me again.
If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofouron.org/users/Opalsong. Thanks for listening.